The tree was large. It seemed to exist on its own sense of scale. Town could not have said if it was 50 feet high or 200. Its bark was the gray of a fine silk scarf. There was a naked man tied to the trunk a little way above the ground by a webwork of ropes, and there was something wrapped in a sheet at the foot of the tree. Town realized what it was as he passed it. He pushed at the sheet with his foot. Wednesday's ruined half a face stared out at him. He would have expected it to be alive with maggots and flies, but it was untouched by insects. It didn't even smell bad. It looked just as it had when he had taken it to the motel. Town reached the tree. He walked a little way around the thick trunk, away from the sightless eyes of the farmhouse. Then he unzipped his fly and pissed against the trunk of the tree. He did up his fly. He walked back over to the house, found a wooden extension ladder, carried it back to the tree. He leaned it carefully against the trunk. Then he climbed up it. Shadow hung limply from the ropes that tied him to the tree. Town wondered if the man were still alive. His chest did not rise or fall. Dead or almost dead, it did not matter.
"Hello, asshole,"
Town said aloud. Shadow did not move. Town reached the top of the ladder, and he pulled out the knife. He found a small branch which seemed to meet Mr. World's specifications and hacked at the base of it with the knife blade, cutting it half through, then breaking it off with his hand. It was about 30 inches long. He put the knife back in its sheath, then he started to climb back down the ladder. When he was opposite Shadow, he paused.
"God, I hate you,"
he said. He wished he could just have taken out a gun and shot him, and he knew that he could not. And then he jabbed the stick in the air toward the hanging man in a stabbing motion. It was an instinctive gesture containing all the frustration and rage inside Town. He imagined that he was holding a spear and twisting it into Shadow's guts.
"Come on,"
he said aloud.
"Time to get moving."
Then he thought,
"First sign of madness. Talking to yourself."
He climbed down a few more steps, then jumped the rest of the way to the ground. He looked at the stick he was holding and felt like a small boy holding his stick as a sword or a spear.
"I could have cut a stick from any tree,"
he thought.
"It didn't have to be this tree. Who the fuck would have known?"
And he thought,
"Mr. World would have known."
He carried the ladder back to the farmhouse. From the corner of his eye, he thought he saw something move, and he looked in through the window into the dark room filled with broken furniture, with the plaster peeling from the walls, and for a moment, in a half-dream, he imagined that he saw three women sitting in the dark parlor. One of them was knitting. One of them was staring directly at him. One of them appeared to be asleep. The woman who was staring at him began to smile, a huge smile that seemed to split her face lengthwise, a smile that crossed from ear to ear. Then she raised a finger and touched it to her neck and ran it gently from one side of her neck to the other. That was what he thought he saw all in a moment, in that empty room which contained, he saw at a second glance, nothing more than old rotting furniture and fly-spotted prints and dry rot. There was nobody there at all. He rubbed his eyes. Town walked back to the brown Ford Explorer and climbed on. He tossed the stick onto the white leather of the passenger seat. He turned the key in the ignition. The dashboard clock said 6:37 a.m. Town frowned and checked his wristwatch, which blinked that it was 13:58.
"Great,"
he thought.
"I was either up on that tree for 8 hours or for minus a minute."
That was what he thought, but what he believed was that both timepieces had, coincidentally, begun to misbehave. On the tree, Shadow's body began to bleed. The wound was in his side. The blood that came from it was slow and thick and molasses black. He did not move. If he was sleeping, he did not wake. Clouds covered the top of Lookout Mountain. Easter sat some distance away from the crowd at the bottom of the mountain, watching the dawn over the hills to the east. She had a chain of blue forget-me-nots tattooed around her left wrist, and she rubbed them absently with her right thumb. Another night had come and gone, and nothing. The folk were still coming by ones and twos. The last night had brought several creatures from the southwest, including two young boys, each the size of an apple tree, and something which he had only glimpsed, but which had looked like a disembodied head the size of a VW bug. They had disappeared into the trees at the base of the mountain. Nobody bothered them. Nobody from the outside world even seemed to have noticed they were there. She imagined the tourists at Rock City staring down at them through their insert-a-quarter binoculars, staring straight at a ramshackle encampment of things and people at the foot of the mountain, and seeing nothing but trees and bushes and rocks. She could smell the smoke from a cooking fire, a smell of burning bacon on the chilly dawn wind. Someone at the far end of the encampment began to play the harmonica, which made her involuntarily smile and shiver. She had a paperback book in her backpack, and she waited for the sky to become light enough for her to read. There were two dots in the sky, immediately below the clouds, a small one and a larger one. A spatter of rain brushed her face in the morning wind. A barefoot girl came out from the encampment, walking toward her. She stopped beside a tree, hitched up her skirts, and squatted. When she had finished, Easter hailed her. The girl walked over.
"Good morning, lady. The battle will start soon now."
The tip of her pink tongue touched her scarlet lips. She had a black crow's wing tied with leather onto her shoulder, a crow's foot on a chain around her neck. Her arms were blue tattooed with lines and patterns and intricate knots.
"How do you know?"
The girl grinned.
"I am Macha of the Morrigan. When war comes, I can smell it in the air. I am a war goddess, and I say blood shall be spilled this day."
"Oh,"
said Easter.
"Well, there you go."
She was watching the smaller dot in the sky as it tumbled down toward them, dropping like a rock.
"And we shall fight them, and we shall kill them, every one. And we shall take their heads as trophies, and the crows shall have their eyes and their corpses."
The dot had become a bird, its wings outstretched, riding the gusty morning winds above them.
"Is that some hidden war goddess knowledge, the whole who's going to win thing, who gets whose head?"
"No, I can smell the battle, but that's all. But we'll win, won't we?" "We have to. I saw what they did to the Allfather. It's them or us."
"Yeah, I suppose it is."
The girl smiled again in the half-light and made her way back to the camp. Easter put her hand down and touched a green shoot which stabbed up from the earth like a knife blade. As she touched it, it grew and opened and twisted and changed until she was resting her hand on a green tulip head. When the sun was high, the flower would open. Easter looked up at the hawk.
"Can I help you?"
The hawk circled about 15 feet above Easter's head slowly, then it glided down to her and landed on the ground nearby. It looked up at her with mad eyes.
"Hello, cutie. Now what do you really look like, huh?"
The hawk hopped toward her uncertainly, and then it was no longer a hawk, but a young man. He looked at her and then looked down at the grass.
"You?"
His glance went everywhere, to the grass, to the sky, to the bushes, not to her.
"Me? What about me?"
"You!"
He stopped. He seemed to be trying to muster his thoughts. Strange expressions flitted and swam across his face.
"He spent too long a bird,"
she thought.
"He has forgotten how to be a man."
She waited patiently. Eventually he said,
"Will you come with me?"
"Maybe. Where do you want me to go?"
"The man on the tree. He needs you. A ghost hurt in his side. The blood came, then it stopped. I think he is dead."
"There's a war on. I can't just go running away."
The naked man said nothing, just moved from one foot to another as if he were uncertain of his weight, as if he were used to resting on the air or on a swaying branch, not on the solid and unchanging earth. Then he said,
"If he is gone forever, it is all over."
"But the battle..."
"If he is lost, it will not matter who wins."
He looked like he needed a blanket and a cup of sweet coffee, and someone to take him somewhere he could shiver and babble until he got his mind back. He held his arms stiffly against his sides.
"Where is this? Nearby?"
He stared at the tulip plant and shook his head.
"Way away."
Well, I'm needed here, and I can't just leave. How do you expect me to get there? I can't fly like you, you know.
No, you can't,
said Horace. Then he looked up gravely and pointed to the other dot that circled them as it dropped from the darkening clouds, growing in size.
He can.